You're listening to episode 23 of the Mad Chatters podcast, March 4th, 2015.
Most everyone's mad here.
Welcome to another episode of the Mad Chatters podcast, your very important date with the happenings at Walt Disney World and around the Disney universe. My name is Derek, and joining me on this illustrious panel are Matthew.
Howdy.
And Jeremy.
Some objects cannot be removed with a mere show of force.
Maybe you should do research on Disney quotes that are actually greetings.
If you will wait a few moments as we get into our news section, that quote will be relevant.
Ooh, that is a great teaser.
I was just judging by episodes past. You know.
Haters gonna hate.
So, I know it's episode 23, so this is probably a little late to be saying this. But for those of you listeners who hear our tagline, and you know, very important date, blah, 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 and wonder, what? Who's going on a date? What's happening? I just want to point out that it is a nod to the White Rabbit of Alice in Wonderland, who is very late for a very important date. And you might be listening right now and be thinking, well, duh, like, of course I made that connection. But there was a certain host of this show who did not make the connection. I will not say his name. We'll just call him Laramie.
I know people named Laramie. That's what's funny.
Laramie?
Yeah. What? They're females, too.
First off, I didn't make that connection like 6 months ago, so why are we just bringing it up now?
Well, because it's on every single episode. I feel like people might be confused and want to know.
You're like Alice in Wonderland. Well, it's just your ride. It's just the ride, right? It's not like the movie.
No, I mean, I like the film, too, but... It didn't totally make sense to me the first time we started batting it around. But, I mean, I get it now. I mean, I'm not mentally challenged.
It's a part of who we are now.
It is a part of
it. Can't change it.
And I'm just kind of shocked that here it is. I mean, March.
I think that's a little, it's just a little too on the subtle side for Jeremy.
Yeah, I'm just wondering what brought this up now.
As I was saying it, I was like, I wonder if people have made that connection yet.
Okay.
But.
I'm scared what you're going to call me out on in 6 months from now about.
I'm taking notes.
Tabs.
Yep, that's right. My list is long. You just wait. Okay, today we're going to be talking about something that I think is kind of fun, and not just because I came up with the idea, but we're going to be talking about the mini movies, the Walt Disney animated movies to be specific, that are featured in the Disney parks, specifically Disney World, since we are a Disney World podcast. Now, there are over 50 animated movies, so obviously we're not going to tackle all those today, otherwise we'd be here for several hours, and we don't want to do that to ourselves or to you, so we are going to focus on the 30s and the 40s, and this will be the first part in a series, so over the next few months we'll come back every now and then and tackle a new decade. But before that, we're going to talk about what's been going on at the parks lately, and I know I've said this before, but we do not pretend to be a news podcast. If we do happen to be the first source of news for you, that's wonderful. We are glad we can provide that for you, but chances are you've probably heard about this stuff before we can say it. But a lot of exciting stuff has been happening, and since we are the Mad Chatters, I think we should chat about some of these things, because I think they're kind of exciting.
Maybe even chit-chat.
I think that sounds like a great idea. So I'm going to send it over to Jeremy first, because his first bit of news is something he actually saw this weekend, and that is the Hub, which has mostly been unveiled now.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to go to the Magic Kingdom on Saturday. Very wet and rainy day in the Magic Kingdom.
With your poncho.
With my poncho. Whole nother story there, but I wore a poncho for the first time in the parks. It was very demoralizing. But anyways, I was excited to see the new Hub expansion. And I'd seen some pictures, but I don't think they really do it justice, because it's definitely something you need to see in person to get the whole perspective of it all, but it looks great. I'm very well pleased. I love the grass. I love the fountains that are featured there as well. And I was telling Derek earlier, the thing I like about it the most is it definitely not only is practical, but I think it is aesthetically pleasing to the whole idea of I felt like I was in a courtyard for a castle, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And so 10 thumbs up.
Is the grass fake?
You know, it looks fake, but I touched it and it felt very real to me. Like, it did not feel like AstroTurf.
Because I saw that they were letting people walk and sit and put their blankets on it and everything.
Yeah, I thought it was AstroTurf, but then when I touched it, it did not feel like AstroTurf.
No, I think I read that it is turf. It's got to be, otherwise it's going to be dead in 3 weeks if everybody's walking all over
it. It might just be really expensive,
it
nice,
may be.
Feeling turf.
Yeah, and I mean, probably, I don't have a lot
of
experience.
I wouldn't put it beyond Disney.
I don't have a lot of experience with AstroTurf beyond, you know, the local putt-putt place. But so it's definitely higher quality than that.
It's not what the old people put on their porches. It's a little better than that.
Yeah, it's a little better than that. Yeah, it probably is turf, now I say. But it feels very real to me and just very nice. And again, I look forward to – it's a great place to just kind of relax in the early evening. You probably don't want to sit out there in the heat of the day because there is no coverage over it. But I can see like – 5, 6, 7 o'clock in the evening time, you need a little place just to chillax before the fireworks or whatever. It's going to be a nice place to sit and enjoy.
One day I'm going to see you out there with your lawn chair drinking tea in front of the castle. I know it. I know it.
In my new Haunted Mansion mug, which I'm very excited about.
It is wonderful.
Nice.
Isn't that nice? And here's the best part at the bottom. I'm not going to show you because there's tea in it currently. But on the inside, on the bottom, it says, hurry back. So like when you finish...
I like that. That's really cool. But about the hub, the fountains threw me off the most, like in a good way. I just can't believe they're putting working fountains like basically on Main Street. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, they look very nice. And again, not too much that they block a view. Like you can still stand behind the fountains and be able to see, you know, the fireworks or the castle or everything perfectly. So
cool. They've
done a great job. Like I said, it's very practical. And a lot of times when something is practical, that usually means it sacrifices aesthetics, but this is very nice.
Yeah. Is it? It is. These ones that are opening are solely, well, not solely, because you can be in them all day and in the evening. But they're for fast pass viewing for the fireworks, right?
At least the one to the right, like when you're staring at the castle to the right hand side. I don't know if that's east or west side or whatever, but I guess that would be east. So, anyways, yes, that one has a fast pass viewing. Fireworks sign, but again, it's open during the day, so I don't know when they actually will start kicking people out.
One of the pictures I saw was of a sign that said closed for FastPass Plus users at 8 p.m.
Oh, okay. Well, there
so,
you go.
Starting at that point, I guess it's you have to have your FastPass to be able to enter that area. So, and when someone took a picture of the fireworks actually going off, and it didn't look all that packed, so either not everyone got a FastPass, and there were still some available, or they've made it to where there's still plenty of room.
Well, another concern I had was that you were going to be so off-centered of the castle during the fireworks viewing. But standing there, even though it's not dead main, you know, dead center Main Street, it's still going to be fine. You're not going to your view of the fireworks will not be obstructed by where you stand. So, also there's still a big mess though by the partner statue that has not been opened yet. So I don't know when that's going to open. But the walls are low enough that you can actually peek over them. And it's muddy, well, because of the rain, it was muddy, nasty mess in there. So that looks like it'll be a few more weeks or months before that's completely done.
Okay, and they still have to add the turrets on either side that are going to match the castle.
Yes.
So I haven't really seen any work on that being done yet. So anyway, okay, well, let's move out of Magic Kingdom and head over to Epcot, where the Flower and Garden Festival is starting to get underway. And all of the topiaries are starting to sprout up. Have you guys seen pictures of these? Any thoughts? Any favorites?
No. I think I like the topiaries. I think they're a nice touch. You know, some of them are ridiculous. Some of them are downright frightening. but
well, because every year they make them more and more realistic and less like actual topiaries.
Yeah,
you know?
They get very – and I mean – you can say that's good if that's what you're into, but to me, I'm fine with a topiary that's just kind of generic looking.
Yeah.
But, you know, once you start putting eyes and noses and they come to life, they get a little creepy. But the big ones this year, obviously, are the Elsa and Anna ones.
Who's that? What movie is that from?
There's this little unknown indie film that Disney's released.
Indie film.
No, but it's they look nice. You know, they're fun. I'm excited because the Tea Garden is back behind the UK Pavilion. So that's exciting. In fact, Matt and I are planning to possibly go to a park here in a couple of weekends. And I was going to suggest Epcot just so we could go by the Tea Garden, but he's rolling his eyes right now. So I'm
no, I like the Tea Garden idea. The Flower and Garden Festival is the least favorite of my – well, I mean, there's only two a year, the big ones. But it's like it's just so underwhelming unless you're really just into that, which are a lot of people really into that.
I think so, because they do sell a lot of merchandise, and they have, like, in the Wonders of Life Pavilion, they do a lot of workshops and all kinds of stuff in there. So apparently it's attracting some people.
I felt like they've slowly added the food element to it.
That's like, that was like 2013 or something. That's pretty new still.
Yeah. And that's so like, please come and enjoy this. There's food. I promise there's good food, not just flowers.
This is what I'm picturing. Like, every time I've seen, like, I stepped into the Wonder of Life Pavilion and I've walked around 1 year, but it's been a while. Nothing in there really attracted me, but there were a lot of, like, old ladies in there. And so I'm picturing, like, the snowbirds that are down in Florida and
that's
they
true.
Go yeah. up and they say, oh, let's go to the flower and garden. And they go and they take a class, you know.
I need to learn how to plot my flowers.
Well, it's like arrangements and things, you know, and they get like HGTV stars that come in there and lead these things.
They usually have a very large display at the entrance to Epcot once you pass through the gates in front of Spaceship Earth. There's that big long oval, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And they usually have a display there that's themed to something. And for whatever reason, they feel necessary to match the theme and the music, not only in that area, but all over the front entryway to Epcot. So as you're walking up to Epcot for 3 months, you hear completely out of place music. For instance, I think like 3 years ago, it was like beach theme, and they had like beach balls, and they were surfing. Mm. And so you walk up to Epcot, and Beach Boys music is playing.
Oh.
Like outside, it's just, it's bizarre. And one year it was like Cinderella or something. So for 3 months out of the year, it makes no sense.
It's not Epcot if you're not hearing that epic Epcot movie music when you walk up.
I remember the beach
good
year.
Good vibrations, though.
Yeah. What is it this year? Do you know off the top of your head?
I don't know. It's always Frozen. It's just that one little display that they it's everything.
And they always somehow incorporate a Stitch topiary in that center as well.
I don't know that they get the point that nobody likes him anymore.
I think he does have a base, but to me, I don't dislike Stitch, but I just associate the attraction with him, and it automatically goes down.
That's not his fault.
That is true. Yeah.
If you guys go to the UK Pavilion, you'll see my favorite topiary, which is Peter Pan up on the rooftop. That's my favorite. I like that one a lot.
With Captain Hook down below.
It. Yeah, oh, it's great. Captain Hook's on the ground, and Peter is on the very edge of the rooftop, you know, doing his hands on hips, sassy pose. but it's really cool. You need to check it out.
Also known as his Bill Paxton pose.
Yes.
Good up, Steve.
Exactly. All right, now let's leave Epcot and go over to Animal Kingdom, where Avatar has been under construction for quite a while now, but Disney Parks Blog officially released some very vague, but some previews of what we might expect to see in the world of Pandora. What stood out to you guys in that video? I can tell you what stood out for me.
Well, the thing that stood out to most of me is the funky looking tree.
Oh, yeah, like the floating mountain thing?
Yeah, where it was like hunkered over and it looked kind of like, at first I thought it was the Tree of Life, but somebody had forgot to water it because it's kind of like wilted over. But
no, I don't know Avatar, but just reading about it, it's like these floating mountain islands things they have, and it's supposed to give that effect of big, huge chunks of land floating in the sky.
Right. Yeah, no, I got it. It just looked like a wilted tree to me at first, but yeah, it is in the film. That's in the film, but anyways.
For me, it was, they showed James Cameron coming in and walking on that tile, which was, it was like dark, but it had like bioluminescent lights. And as he took a footprint and then lifted his foot, like his footprint kind of stayed and glowed and then slowly went away. That's going to be cool. I don't know where they're going to incorporate that, but.
That will be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Looking at it, I really hope it, I mean, it's going to be expensive if they do it. I hope it's as immersive as it should be with all those elements. And it's not just like one small section is that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I hope it's all over that at nighttime, that's the way it is. And I think that's what they're shooting for.
You think?
I hope.
What I'm picturing is that's going to be like a queue for the boat attraction or something.
That's what I think. Or like as you leave the, you know, the exit queue, as you're walking out kind of a thing.
Maybe.
Who knows, though? Who knows? Mm. lots still to speculate, but I thought that video they showed was kind of fun just to let us know that they're still working on it, but they haven't given up yet.
We're still here.
Okay, now, speaking of concept art, they also released concept art for Planet Hollywood, which already exists in Downtown Disney, but they're going to completely redo the outside so that it matches the new Disney Springs theme. Again, I'm excited. I think it was a really good idea. Was this Planet Hollywood's idea or Disney's idea?
Considering Planet Hollywood is owned by, like, Sylvester Stallone, I'm going to go with it was Disney's idea. No, I think this was just announced, though. I mean, they had talked about they were going to overlay it somehow, but what they're actually going to make it, I think, is the news.
Matt. I know. From the beginning, they said observatory. I remember telling you all specifically they're making this into an observatory. They're overlaying it. So when it came out, I was like, this isn't like news. They just showed new concept art for it.
Oh. Well, they released the concept art.
It's going to be an observatory in case you missed that.
In case you weren't around 6 months ago.
Sorry. Yeah, four-story stargazing observatory. Well, there
now,
you go.
Now, will this include an overhaul of the inside as well? Does anybody know? Or did I miss that?
I think I read that too. Yeah, the inside as well. Yeah,
because that will be awesome. Yeah. I mean, a stargazing dining experience, that would be cool.
I think so, yeah. Even if it is Planet Hollywood.
They're going to have, like, the celebrities' faces, like, in space. Stargazing.
Like the constellations.
Kind of like a Hunger Games situation. You'll hear the cannon boom, and then their face will show up.
I have to look in the telescope.
When you match the stars, like, I see the Arnold constellation, and I see the... Yeah.
It's not a tumor.
Okay, good reference. We got more, guys. I told you there's a lot of news, but this one I think Jeremy is most excited about. And that's a reboot that's coming to Disney XD in the year 2017. Jeremy, you want to do the honors?
Woo! Yes, they are rebooting DuckTales, which if you are a child of the late 80s, early 90s, as I you probably grew up watching DuckTales, remembering Uncle Scrooge and Launchpad McDuck or McQuack. And Huey, Dewey, and Louie and Duckworth and the whole gang apparently is coming back as well. They're going to bring back all these beloved characters for a new generation, and I'm assuming they're not going to screw it up because there's a lot of nostalgia attached to this.
That's the only thing that makes me not like overjoyed about it, because I want to see what they're going to do with it. You know,
I'm excited that the thing that gives me hope is that they're not just bringing back like the main four and going to add all new characters.
Right.
They're going to keep a lot of the old characters, which is a good sign to me, because if they were going to be like, we're going to bring back Uncle Scrooge and the nephews, but everything else is going to be different, then I would hate that. But right. Since they're going to bring back a lot of the old characters, I think
they even said Glumgold and Magica and all those the little side villain characters with Beagle Boys.
Yes, yeah. So it's going to be great. And, well, at least I have expectations that it's going
to
be great.
I'd like to see how the animation is going to be before I just throw my head in completely and get excited.
That is true. I don't want to see any CGI. I want to see, like, old school.
Well, not even that. You know, these are actually kind of cute. The new Mickey Mouse shorts, you know how it's like completely different kind of animation, reimagining of the characters.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll do that, something like that. But, you know, things now are a little more minimalistic, you know, the style is. And that might be fine. It might be enjoyable. I don't know. I'm just saying I want to see it before I say I like that.
But if this turns out to be a success, we can only hope that that means a reboot for Darkwing Duck and The Adventures of Gummy Bears and Tailspin and Chippendale Rescue Ranger.
I thought you were going to say Dumbo Circus.
Dumbo. Oh, don't get me started. I would even settle just put that out on DVD so I can watch it again, because you can hardly find
these things. People would spend. I would spend a lot of money to have Adventures in Wonderland on DVD.
Adventures in Wonderland, Dumbo Circus, and Welcome to Pooh Corner. If they put those out on DVD, I'd buy them in a heartbeat. I would eat ramen noodles for a week just so I could afford them. Anyways.
Okay. Well, let's get back to topic for something a little more serious. And that is the death of the beloved Leonard Nimoy, who, of course, is known mostly for Star Trek, I'm sure. But he did have a few Disney connections. Matt, did you ever ride Body Wars?
I did.
Okay. Because he directed the film for that.
I was just going to give a little fact there. Body Wars, of course, was in the Wonders of Life Pavilion at Epcot. Went on from 1989 to 2007.
We just missed it.
Did you ever watch it on like YouTube or anything?
No.
That's really
not.
Terrible. I mean, if you could imagine shrinking down and you're going in and there's a woman climbing on a splinter inside a man's finger, and it's
awesome. Jeremy, you read off that Body Wars as if you had the facts written down in front of you. So why don't you tell us the rest of the stuff that he was in connected to Disney?
Well, the other connection that Leonard Nimoy had to the Disney community was he was the voice in an animated film. Anybody know which one?
I know.
I'm going to guess the Black Cauldron.
No.
How old do you think he is?
No. Black Cauldron was the 80s.
He was 80.
That's right.
What are you doing? How old do you think he is?
Well, I thought the Black Cauldron was older than that. No, but he was in Atlantis.
Yeah, he played the King of Atlantis, and the quote I said at the beginning of the show was one of his character quotes. Even though he was just a minor character, it wasn't a huge thing. But anyway, so two Disney connections there to Leonard Nimoy. I don't want to be overly dramatic about it, but it was kind of sad. As somebody who's new to the sci-fi genre, who's just kind of gotten into it in the last few years, and I've watched a little bit of Star Trek, some of the movies and some of the original episodes. But I think his character was just so iconic. Like, even if you never saw the show, you know who Mr. Spock is and you know the lines, and he really has cemented himself in American pop culture history. So, and his handprints are outside the theater, the Chinese theater there in Disney's Hollywood Studios, which I took a venture over when I was there at the parks on Saturday and went and paid tribute to him as well. So
that's right.
Rest in peace.
Well, right now I'm going to send it over to our new correspondent, Carl, who's on the scene with a Disney World tip.
Hello, this is Carl's Walt Disney World tip of the day. Did you know that at Walt Disney World, covering most of the parks, there is a secret invisible dome? This secret invisible dome acts for two purposes. The first purpose is to keep in the animals. All of the animatronic birds and squirrels and lions and tigers, they're located at Disney World, as well as to regulate the temperature. At Disney World, it is always a perfect 72 degrees. You never have to worry about it getting colder or hotter there. And they can regulate when it rains. So sometimes when you go to Disney World, it does rain, but they always turn that off during the peak times. Now, sometimes they will have a thunderstorm, but that is only to get people to go back to their hotels. If you wait it out, the thunderstorm will go away, and you can enjoy the park with less people. Thank you, Disney World.
It's time for another Mad Chatter game! And now here's your host, Mad Chatter Jeremy!
Thank you, Steve, thank you. It's great to be back with another Mad Chatter game. I am your host, Mad Chatter Jeremy, and today we're playing a special game, The Magic Kingdom by the Numbers. So today we're going to pit Mad Chatter Derek against Mad Chatter Matt. And
you didn't leave room for all my fans to cheer after you said my name.
No, I did.
it hurts.
Today's game, I'm going to ask you a question about the Magic Kingdom, and the answer is going to be a number, 1 through 15. I'll give you a moment to write down your number, then I'll ask for your answer, and the one who if you get it exactly, you will get 2 points. If neither of you gets it exactly, then whoever comes the closest, either high or low, will get 1 point. Any questions?
Let's do it.
All right. Ready? And here we go. How many table service, including character, dining locations are there in the Magic Kingdom? Write your answer down. How many table service, including character dining, locations are there in the Magic Kingdom? Derek said...
Oh, now look. Now that five. Seems like I cheated.
No, I know. It's not you. I can't see it. Five.
It's five.
Both of you said five, and the correct answer is six.
What?
Six. So
Crystal Palace, Tony's Plaza, Liberty Tree Tavern, and Be Our Guest.
Oh, see, I forgot Liberty Tree Tavern.
And what did I forget?
Bella's Royal Table.
Oh.
Yeah.
Boo on her.
Each of you get a point because you tied, even though you, yeah, because okay. You both came the closest.
And we were close.
That's right. So, all right, question number That's two. Right.
Very good.
You little patronizing.
No, I'm genuine. I'm always genuine. Number two, how many ride vehicles are on Astro Orbiter?
Ooh.
How many ride vehicles are on Astro Orbiter? Answers, please. Derek says 12, and Matt says 12, and the correct answer is 12. Yeah. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Wow, good job.
Thank you. 2 points.
So now,
sorry for all the paper.
We're tied 3-3.
Here, I'll add to it.
I was not fancy enough to have a dry erase board, but you don't either.
Nah. That would be handy.
We need to invest in some dry erase boards.
This would be the only time I would ever use it.
Okay. Next question. In the Winnie the Pooh queue, how many interactive honey screens are there? I'm talking about in the queue, you can walk by and you can touch dripping honey, and it moves the honey with your hand and revealing characters underneath. How many of these screens are there?
It'd be sweet if that was real honey. No pun intended.
Actually, it would be disgusting. Think about all the
really
people that walk by.
I would just sit there and lick my hand.
Like you and all the
you
children.
You are Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah, there you go. I'm huggable and cuddleable and...
dim-witted.
A bit of a glutton, yes.
All right, answers, please.
Dim-witted.
Derek said 1, Matt says 3, and the correct answer is 4.
They're 4.
So Matt gets a point for coming the closest.
Ooh, up yours, NYPD. And for reference, Derek's wearing an NYPD shirt. I have nothing but respect for the police department. Please don't come kill me. Why he's wearing that shirt, I don't know, but that was completely a reference to him.
Happy hours, NYPD!
Yeah. We're not a video podcast. You might not know where that angle came from.
Oh, man.
Oh.
Oh, me. Anyways, number 5. How many bear portraits are there in the queue for the Country Bear Jamboree?
There's a queue for the Country Bear Jamboree?
Well, that waiting area before you go into the theater. There are portraits of bears. How many portraits are there? Derek says 8, Matt says 6, and the correct answer is 9.
Woo!
9, 9, 9. By the way, we saw Country Bear Jamboree this Saturday. It was the first time in a while I've seen it. And, you know, when you go in with low expectations, it's a really enjoyable show. And the crowd I was with was really into it. And the crowd really can make that show.
By the time Blood on the Saddle Guy starts, it's...
Matt's crying. He's like, oh, yeah. He's going to the front, up to the altar.
Yeah, he's going down to the... Oh, it's kind of like that, yeah.
No, it's nothing like that. Okay, next question. In the Hall of Presidents, not including Abraham Lincoln, how many presidents are seated?
Ooh.
That's
remember,
a good question.
Lincoln is seated, but then he stands. So not including Lincoln, but how many presidents are seated the entire time? Answers, please. Derek says 14, Matt says 10, and the correct answer is 14. Congratulations, Derek. Okay, moving on quickly. On the Jungle Cruise, when you come to the end... Now, I have to ask a question. The man that's there at the end of the Jungle Cruise, the animatronic, or it's not even animatronic, but the shrunken head salesman, what is his name?
Trader Sam.
Okay, I thought so as well. But as I was doing research for this game, I've discovered that the one in Disneyland is supposed to be named Trader Sam, but this one's name is like Chief Nami. But I could have swore I've heard him call him Trader Sam as well. So we'll go with Trader Sam. Just throwing that out there. Okay, on the Jungle Cruise, how many shrunken heads does Trader Sam hold in his right hand?
Right hand?
In his right hand. How many shrunken heads?
Oh, yeah, you're right, you're right. Okay.
Answer?
Hold on, I'm trying to get my paper up.
Derek says 4, Matt says 3, and the correct answer is 3.
Yeah. Booyah.
He has 4 total because he wears 1 around his neck, but 3 in his right hand. Gentlemen, we are tied 6-6, moving on to question number 7. Okay? On the sign for Peter Pan's flight, I'm talking about the sign over the entrance to the queue.
The one that you like objectively but hate subjectively?
Yes. How many hands are on the sign?
Ooh, that sign's pretty handsy.
I know, I dated it in high school. Derek says 1, Matt says 12, and the correct answer is 10. So Matt is the closest.
I think I'm confused by the question. How many people are on that sign?
Peter, Michael, John, Wendy, and Tinkerbell. So 5.
Okay.
Hold on. I'm contesting.
You're contesting what?
He was just there on Saturday.
I literally looked at the sign and counted the hands to make sure.
Okay. I want you to look at a picture of the sign right now, and you tell me how many hands are on there.
Okay, I'm Googling it right now.
Because I thought this was trying to be tricksy, and I was being real smart about it. And I think I'm right.
Is this a sufficient picture?
That is the picture I'm looking at.
Okay, I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
So the clock has no hands. You see, I'm right. There are 2 hands. Actually, there's 14.
You're still wrong because there'd be 14.
But I'm closest. I win.
You are still closest even over Derek. Okay, human hands, and you're still closest even with that.
You gotta be specific. I thought you were trying to be smarty pants because I was like, that's a stupid question.
Well, I was trying to be, but I was trying to get you thinking vein of Captain Hook and trying to think, but he only has 1.
Big Ben. I was like, ooh, he's trying to be funny. There's a clock.
No, I'm clearly not as smart as you think I am, but thank you. Okay, next question. In the Haunted Mansion, as your doom buggy goes through the library, the busts of famous literary authors follow you as you travel across the room. How many busts are on the shelves?
Not different busts. Just
total
busts.
Yes. Derek says 4, Matt says 8, and the correct answer is 8.
Oh.
Congratulations, Matt.
Wow.
Now there's like 3 total people. They just recreated them like 5 times, right?
I believe so, but yes. Total busts. Okay. Next question. In the finale of Splash Mountain, you come up to the showboat when they're singing Zippity-Doo-Dah. How many birds are on the showboat? Now, I say birds because some are chickens and some are like the hybrid giant geese, ducks, whatever they are. Goose.
Genetically altered geese.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what kind of birds they are. But how many birds are on the showboat?
Ready.
What's your name? Derek says 10, Matt says 10, and the correct answer is 11.
Oh.
So both of you are up by 1, but you both get a point.
This is a good game. I like this.
Good. And the final question here. How many restroom locations are located in the Magic Kingdom? And by restroom location, I mean I'm grouping if they're in one group together, men's, women's, companion. How many different places are there to go to the bathroom?
That are just designated as bathrooms, like not inside a restaurant.
No, inside the restaurant as well. Yeah.
What?
But I'm saying not like a women's bathroom counts as 1, a men's bathroom counts as another 1.
Still, there's got to be more than 15.
I think so too. Well, I mean, we already know there are 6 table service.
again, this is according to, I did not count these bathrooms. This is according to the official My Disney Experience app.
Okay.
Okay.
They both say 13, and according to the app, the answer is 15.
15.
So there you go. But however, now that I'm really thinking about this, and I just noticed, this can't be right, because there are restrooms located in the Columbia Harbor House, but they don't have that marked as a restroom location on this map here on the Disney, My Disney Experience. So, all right, well, after the end of the game, Derek ended up with 7 points.
Yay.
But it was not enough to meet Matthew, who had 10 points.
Yeah.
So congratulations, Matt. You were the winner of another Mad Chatter game. Take us away, Steve.
Thank you for joining us for another Mad Chatter game. Join us next time. Same Mad Chatter fun, same Mad Chatter podcast.
I think when most people think of Disney, they think movies. Now, we are Disney Parks enthusiasts, so that may not be our first thought, but I would say that's the case for most people. But one of the great things about Disney World is that it allows those movies to come to life in front of our eyes. And all of a sudden we're in Captain Hook's ship flying over London, or we are under the sea with Ariel. But we're going to talk about some of those movies starting in 1937, all the way back with Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And we're going to think about where we can find those movies in the parks today. So I'm going to turn it over to you guys. When I say Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs and you think Disney World, what's the first thing that comes to mind?
Snow White's Scary Adventures.
Okay.
Adventure.
Formerly.
Yeah.
In Fantasyland.
Rest in peace. Yeah. And of course, the new Mine Train.
Dwarfs. I think it's funny that the oldest movie, is it the newest attraction? At least, definitely the newest e-ticket.
At the Magic Kingdom, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that shows the lasting power of that film.
Definitely.
That it really has transcended generations. And I work with preschoolers, and even preschoolers today, they know Snow White. You know, they have seen that film. And there's a lot of Disney films that I wish they'd seen, but they haven't. But Snow White still remains a very popular princess. And I think that scene that even her influence is extended over into Epcot. She has a meet and greet there. You know, she's in the Magic Kingdom. She's in Disneyland. I mean, it's not just a little bloop on the map. She, you know, she is an essential character and an essential film to the Disney universe.
Yeah,
as are the dwarves.
Definitely,
arguably the dwarves almost more so.
Yeah,
at least at least Dopey, you know, and Grumpy, and they seem to be leading the charge more so
than
the rest.
They have the coveted meet and greet the one time a year, right, for the Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween party
and the Christmas party.
You can meet all seven dwarfs at the same time and get a picture with them.
Yeah,
it's pretty terrific.
And I love that the nods to the film are not just because it's the first film, you know, where you have to let's pay homage to this first film that he created. It's because people, like you said, really do genuinely love it still. Kids today still fall in love with that film as if it were made last year under the name Frozen.
And it is featured too in the Main Street Electrical Parade, a section there with the dwarves. They have the mines. I think
Fantasmic.
I was going to say
Fantasmic is in there.
Yes.
So, you know, it definitely has lasting power, even to the point that the witch had her own candy shop there at Downtown Disney for a time. Remember
That's
that?
Right, Cauldron.
Candy Cauldron. Yeah. You know, in Fantasmic, I'm thinking of all the Disney princesses they could have used for that medley there in the middle. They use Ariel, Belle, and Snow White. And arguably, Snow White is the climactic point.
That's
the
true.
Key change into Someday My Prince Will Come. And that's kind of the last one you had before it turns dark, and then there's the queen. So,
who says, still slave in the magic mirror.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and she's really the queen of all, maybe Maleficent. Well, in the artwork, it's typically the Wicked Queen who's kind of the queen of all the villains.
Well, in Fantasmic, I think she kind of, it almost seems like she heads up all the other villains. Like
she's the one who summons them from the cauldron
Right.
I think, too, that, you know, Walt always said it was all started by a mouse, but I think Snow White took the company to the next level. Like, Mickey Mouse definitely was the first level. Snow White, success of Snow White, bumped it up to the next level.
Yeah.
So. I was reminded of that when I saw the One Man's Dream thing again recently, that they built the entire Walt Disney Studios off of the profit from Snow White alone.
Mm.
Yeah, they bet the house and bet the farm, and he cashed out his life insurance policy. Had Snow White failed, we would not be having a podcast right now, and the world would be a very sad and dark place. I don't even want to go there.
I remember from the Walt Disney Family Museum learning that at that time people didn't think you could make a full-length animated film because they said, how can you get personalities out of animated characters? There's no way you can do that. And for a full-length film, you have to have personality. And he said, oh, I think we can do it. And it probably helps that he named the dwarfs after their personality.
Yeah.
But still, you can individually see each of their personalities come out. And it's a full-length animated film. So there you go. He stuck it to the man.
Still sticking it to the man after all these years. Did we mention last week, I think that you wanted to, but we didn't, that Walt Disney Animation Studios took home two Academy Awards for best animated feature and the best animated short feature.
It's true.
For Big Hero 6 and Feast, which worked together, right? That was the short before that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And last year with Frozen, that was the first time Walt Disney Animation Studios had ever won the Oscar for Best Animated Film. And now here they are 2 years in a row. But anyway. Now, Matt, I know you're a big fan of Snow White's Scary Adventures. Do you think the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train is a worthy replacement of it in Magic Kingdom?
Is this a baited question because, you know, I love it?
No,
I love that attraction.
I mean, I really you like it, but...
I love everything about it. This past... I don't even know what it was. It doesn't matter. I was sitting there doing the baby swap with my wife, and because it was almost closing time, they let me actually wait in the exit instead of waiting outside with a little fast pass. They just let me wait in the exit just to make sure I could ride if it was past midnight. And so I got to stand there at the queue where they'd load the trains the whole time for about 25 minutes and just took in all of that, that little loading zone area with the mine... the mine lanterns, and across the way there's a faint black light on like the saws and the picks, and it's just really cool. They got the AC running really high in there, and it's the animatronics are great, the music is great, scenery is great. It's a wonderful fitting tribute and replacement to that classic attraction.
Cool. I like that it's almost a prequel to the movie because it follows the dwarf story. And then you don't really... And at the very end, it's like, oh, this is where the story begins, where the bad stuff starts happening. So I think that's kind of cool. It makes it more lighthearted as opposed to Scary Adventures, which was scary, hence its name.
Yeah.
And it scared Derek.
It scared me. Remember. It did. Yeah. I jumped and maybe let out a sound.
This past time, I don't know what was going on with Well, I don't want to give that away. And people haven't watched the ending of Seven Dwarfs.
Right. If you want to know, go to the park and ride it yourself. It's only $105. Anyway...
And 105 minutes.
Maybe. All right. Well, after Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, 3 years later came Pinocchio. And I personally can think of probably just as many, if not more, references to Pinocchio in the parks as I can Snow White. For me, the first thing I thought of was Jiminy Cricket and how he hosts Wishes, because that's still one of my favorite things at Disney World after all these years. And he is your host for the evening, and he refers to the Blue Fairy at one point. He kind of ties it all together, and of course that's Pinocchio.
It's interesting how Jiminy Cricket and Tinkerbell really kind of became corporate symbols for the Disney company, and that's because in the 1950s when television was first starting to come up and Walt was starting to be a television star with programming, they were still worried that TV was going to bomb and fail, and they didn't want to associate Mickey Mouse and the core characters with a failure, so they dove in and used some of these secondary characters to host your television programs. Well, of course, as we know, being on this side of history, TV took off and was successful, and Walt Disney had numerous television shows that came and went throughout the years. And that's really how Jiminy Cricket became a major character, and Tinkerbell as well, because they hosted the Wonderful World of Color and the Disneyland programs, and that leaked over into the parks.
Wellspring of information, and I learned something.
Good. I'm glad. So yeah, now, so you have Jiminy who leads Wishes, but Pinocchio as a film for 1939 is just a masterpiece. I mean, even by today's standards, it's a masterpiece of storytelling and artistry and just an amazing feat. And so I'm glad that it has lasting power. It's sad that the only thing I think of – well, not the only thing, but the first thing I think of is the Pinocchio Village House restaurant in Fantasyland, which is a sad, sad tribute to such a great film.
It is. It's just not the best. But Jeremy, you have some fun facts courtesy of Jim Corcus.
I was also going to say to the most epic Match Hatter breakdown we've ever had as far as I was sharing a fun fact, and Matt literally was so mad he walked out.
We can share that at a later time.
But, what? You're not? No, you have to share it now.
Okay.
We're talking about movies in the parks, and this is a movie, and you claim...
Yes, that whole restaurant tells the story of that film. And that's why you notice if you walk inside and you look up, there's like an upstairs area, but it's very difficult and very slim and skinny. And that's supposed to be the marionette stages where they would stand up there on the platform and do the marionettes below. And then the one room, which has windows into Small World, is supposed to be like you are in... is it Cleo? I can't remember. Yeah, Cleo. You're in the fishbowl looking out, and Matt just will not accept that that's the truth. So
it's not even details that make sense.
Right. Like, it's not even a curved window or anything. Well, he and Pinocchio and Geppetto were in Spectrum Magic, I remember, because I remember them being tied to the float and like...
At which Jiminy was also the host for, if you remember.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
And he had a little animatronic version of him at the end waving.
Uh-huh.
And the disco ball.
Now, they were in the afternoon parade previously to Festival of Fantasy. I can't remember if they were in Festival of Fantasy or not, but they are in Main Street Electrical because there's the giant Pleasure Island float that's lit up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and that's the strangest. Yeah. People are like, what is that? I'm like, have you watched? They've clearly not seen the movie.
And then the dancing
at a Disney World Park.
That's right. After you said that, I remember the donkeys
smoking cigars and pipes included in a Disney World parade.
Not just smoking pipes, underage minors smoking cigars.
Yeah,
but there is a Pinocchio attraction, a dark ride in Disneyland, which was enjoyable and fun. I liked it. You know, it's a standard dark ride.
Well, speaking of Disneyland, if you ride Storybook Canal Boats, you actually go through Monstro the Whale's mouth.
That's right.
Yeah.
And are digested.
No, that is not. The host in her very sweet Fantasyland voice said something to the effect of, and Geppetto fed him dynamite and blew out his tail, which is how we can sail through him today.
Oh,
and
that's
like, ooh, that's disturbing. That is dark.
What if they had like a big chunk of whale blubber on the left? It's all bloody and nasty. And now to the little villages. We are leaving out a very significant part of Pinocchio that is a lasting part of the Walt Disney World parks, company, TV, anything and everything. And that is that practically the theme song for Disney comes from this film, and it is...
I've got no strings.
You beat me to it. No, it's When You Wish Upon a Star.
That's true.
I mean, it's a Walt Disney Pictures theme song, the old Walt Disney Pictures with the little blue castle thing. You can't hear that without thinking Disney and Disney
when
World.
When they want you to cry.
Yes,
at
yes.
Any sort of show, fireworks, parade, just play When You Wish Upon a Star with a string quartet.
It's the jumping octave. Music people, it's the jumping octave. Just like Somewhere Over the Rainbow. You go to that bam, bam. You jump an eighth and people start crying. Just the way it is.
Yep.
Even to the point that the Disney cruise ships... this through the foghorns on the Disney cruise. I mean, that's how iconic Disney is. If a foghorn can play it and you can identify where it's from, that's iconic.
That song is 75 years old and still, I mean, it's timeless.
Yeah. But not to mention, it is in Fantasmic as well, which I think just about every film we say will be to some point. But this one does play a larger role, like Snow White, in that Mickey battles Monstro there, and he splashes the waves. Or I don't know if Mickey battles him, but at least he splashes the waves.
Oh, and in your little Disneyland version, there's an extended
thing. Instead of the jungle animals, you get the... instead of the bubbles,
10 minutes of the puppets moving.
You get the puppets moving.
Like this. I'm doing it right now.
Yeah, I see you. You look just like a puppet in Fantasmic at Disneyland.
I felt like I was there.
No thing.
Where's the 200 feet ship?
In Derek's imagination.
I honestly cannot remember Monstro. So when you said Mickey came out in battle, I was waiting for you to say Pinocchio. And I'm trying to picture the scene where Mickey and Pinocchio go at it.
Like, Pinocchio tells lies so that his nose grows and he uses it as a weapon. Yeah.
Ooh, that's good. I like that. Now, I don't know. There are a lot of statues around the hub at Main Street. But one that I always think of is Pinocchio because he's sitting down and he's looking at Jiminy Cricket, who is standing on his toe. And if you ever get a chance to check that out, it's one of my favorite statues that they had. Like, they, you know what I'm talking about? They have, like, those pedestals and the little statues on top.
They used to be around the partner statue. They're not there right now. They moved them to be around the fountains.
I saw that.
Yeah. I don't know if they're going to move back when the partner statue is revealed again and the area, but for now, they are located around the fountains.
Do they look okay where they are now?
Yeah, I think they look fine.
Yeah, might as well just leave it then. Yeah.
Or add more.
Okay, well, after Pinocchio, that same year, in fact, was Fantasia, which is, you know, several short films set to classical music.
This film showed the innovation and the vision that Walt had, and I think that this kind of idea that he had never really was able to climax in the way that I think he wanted it to.
Yeah.
Because I think he wanted to continue Fantasia, at least the idea of animating classical music and putting visual pictures with mental pictures and audio pictures. And but then, of course, World War II kind of comes and the company all kind of has to batten down the hatches. But definitely has a long-term effect, more so than you would think, on the parks and on the culture in general.
I think the thing I think of most is that hat. And not just because there was a giant icon in Great Movie Ride, but it's that hat is featured a lot. Like, it's in PhilharMagic. You know, Donald steals it.
Well, arguably,
just say Sorcerer Mickey in general. And the
Sorcerer's Apprentice really is kind of Mickey Mouse's, kind of his peak point, really, as far as his films and shorts go, I would say. So you have... which is interesting because originally it was not supposed to be Mickey Mouse. Do you know who was supposed to be the Disney character featured in Sorcerer's Apprentice?
Donald Duck.
No, good guess, though. Dopey. Dopey was originally the one that was going to be in it. But Sorcerer's Apprentice is definitely the one everybody knows. You also know the hippos and the dancing ostriches.
Right.
Which is another feature. Probably the scariest villain of any film in it as well.
I don't know what the Chernabog is. I don't know if that's a foreign name for something, but to hear Disney tell the story of who it is Lucifer himself.
Yes. Yes.
I believe it.
Which is the king of all villains is Satan.
you don't really get more villainous than that.
No. This film is so – when you sit back and think of – oof, I just broke my marker. Back and think about it.
That's the Chernabog theme song.
Uh-huh. The Night on Bald Mountain.
Oh, yeah.
It's so pervasive in all of – in most of the Disney parks in some way or another. You can't – if we could start listing – Spectrumagic was like half of it was Fantasia, right?
A little bit of fun fact. Chernabog is a Slavic deity, which means black god.
Ooh, that's frightening.
Yeah, that is kind of scary.
That part is really pretty, though, because when the day breaks and the bell rings and the monks and all the start singing their little song, that was Walt's. The story of all stories, that good overcomes evil, love overcomes hate, that kind of thing. That's why he was working through all of that.
Yeah.
Preach it.
Mm.
also featured in Spectral Magic, really heavy featured Fantasia in Spectral Magic. You had the Chernabog that opened and closed. You had the spinning hippos on top of the alligator.
One of my favorites was the little rotund fellow that gets drunk on the wine with all the Pegasus creatures.
Bacchus, isn't that his name? Or
maybe. Bacchus. That was one of my favorite floats because he was sitting up there turning around and all the little... Yeah.
Like and that. The giant ostriches that would dance in Spectral Magic as well.
Yeah.
So a lot of
I wonder why they latched onto that so much in the early 90s. Why Fantasia was like, let's put that in our whole parade.
It is surprising how big of a presence it has in the parks. When you think about the movies that have no presence at all, I mean, Fantasia has an entire scene in The Great Movie Ride. It's the only Disney film that has one.
I would say that a lot of... Well, Sorcerer's Apprentice is different. I'm going to separate Sorcerer's Apprentice from the rest of the films, or the rest of the part of the film, because that really is very iconic in and of itself. But I think... excuse me. Okay. I know... And when I was in elementary school, we would watch films and stuff in music class. And I remember watching portions of Fantasia because it was set to the classical music. And we got, you know, a little bit of education that way. So I think a lot of people recognize it without actually... Hey, my music teacher in elementary school was a huge Disney World fan. And I kind of wish I could go back in time now and talk to her about it, because she would go like once a year and we'd anyways, that's has nothing to do with what we're talking about. but I think a lot of people have seen Fantasia without actually realizing they've seen Fantasia.
Yeah.
Okay.
Portions of it, at least.
Yeah, because you saw a portion and you may not have known that was from Fantasia, but you recognize, oh, I've seen those hippos, those dancing
and
hippos.
And it's probably, in the case of the Night on Bald Mountain, I think that not so much with the others. Like, the Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairies is very clearly Nutcracker, Tchaikovsky. But when you think of the Night on Bald Mountain and people hear that, at least in my mind, the first thing I think of is Disney and the Night on Bald Mountain thing from Fantasia.
For me, it's also in Wishes, the song that plays during Sorcerer's Apprentice. Like, that's my favorite part of Wishes, is when they shoot up the red sparks and it says boom.
Oh, yeah.
Boom, I always think of Mickey with the mop, which is, of course, Fantasia and not the original classical song. But
a slightly lesser known portion of Fantasia was the Rite of Spring, in which they had the beginning of the world as depicted by the animators, and the primeval world scene with the Stegosaurus battling the T-Rex, which finds its way into
Ellen's Energy Adventure.
Well, I'm going to say before that, the Magic Skyway at the 64 World's Fair, and then the diorama there at Disneyland, and the same thing in the Universe of Energy. Ellen's Energy Adventure. Yeah. Just a little thing like that. That little part, Primeval World part of Fantasia. Very memorable just because of that scene.
Yeah.
Anytime I see a T-Rex fighting a Stegosaurus, I immediately go to Fantasia.
Which scientists tell us wouldn't have happened. But
would not have happened because they lived very far apart, according to them.
They have a pivotal role in, of all places, to be this seminal film that is featured everywhere. They are a section at the All-Star Movies Resort.
Yes, that's right.
Which is a blend of the early Fantasia with Fantasia 2000, which we are not discussing. But nevertheless, there in that pool is another Sorcerer Mickey on the mountain conducting some water jets in the pool.
Oh, I don't think I've ever even seen that.
Huh. Yep.
And, of course, you can meet him over at the Animation Academy every
Art
once
Animation,
in a while.
Yes.
Yeah, Art of Animation. There you go. No, no.
Animation
Courtyard, that whole area. He's often in there meeting and greeting.
And you just said it as an understatement earlier, but just to reiterate, the giant hat, which is almost completely gone, of course, inspired by Mickey Mouse Sorcerer's Apprentice from Fantasia.
Well, that Mickey, the Sorcerer Mickey, was a icon for the studios from the beginning. With the you ever watched the old Sorcery in the Sky fireworks show?
No, I haven't.
Which was the original. It had the big finale for that over the Chinese Theater. The big finale was a big inflatable Sorcerer Mickey who shot fireworks out of his finger. That was kind of like the big thing.
Ooh, wow.
And he literally blow up in front of you as you watched it. Now, quickly, it was very fast. But, like, at the end of the show, they tried to make it dark, and you could see that balloon just start to kind of rise.
Kind of like the Marshmallow Man on Ghostbusters. Yeah. Like, he just kind of a... Yeah.
Well, after Fantasia in 1941 was Dumbo, and like all the ones before it, Dumbo also still has a really big presence in the park.
I do. Yeah, somebody on Twitter mentioned about what are some iconic things in the park that will never go away, and they were alluding to the fact that they don't think It's a Small World will ever leave the Disney parks. And I said, I don't think Dumbo will ever leave the parks either. I think it's so iconic. Just the little spinner, but you know, it when you think Fantasyland, that is at least top.
Well, not only that, it is the icon for parents and children having fun together, because it's kind of that little smarmy, cheesy thought you have when you're going with your granddad or dad or uncles and stuff, that hey, we're going to ride Dumbo, and Dumbo, this is my Uncle Jim the biker pictured on Dumbo. It's just one of those things that overcomes all that. And it's kind of the picture of what Disney World is.
I think a lot of parents think that that will be their child's inaugural ride. You know, if he can ride anything, it will be Dumbo.
We have yet to take Anna on it. We've been there like three times.
Oh, yeah. That's true. Except for Matt and Jessica. But most
of Pirates of the Caribbean.
Her ride is Pirates. But, yeah, Dumbo, again, amazing film. Very short. Only 87 minutes. Barely comes in to be established as a feature film. But 1941, Dumbo was going to be on the cover of Time magazine, but he got bumped.
Ah, yes.
Do you know why he got bumped?
Those Japanese. I mean, Pearl Harbor.
Isn't it always?
Too soon, Derek, too soon. the attack on Pearl Harbor bumped Dumbo from the front page. But Walt, 4 for 4 there for his first four films.
Oh,
that's
definitely.
Pretty good track record.
And there's also drunkenness in this.
Yeah, another good film.
There is.
And a lot of racism.
Well, if there's any indicator that it really is going to stay for the long haul, it's the fact that just 2 or 3 years ago, they added a second one, and they really upped it with the lights in the bottom and the fountains and everything. So I'm pretty it's going to stay.
Not that it's all like Dumbo's land, but I mean, really, they built a small... Why they're not calling Storybook Circus a land and they called Toontown Fair a land is beyond me. I think it should be its own land. But
you're here.
That aside, it's almost like a little Dumbo mini land over there with the circus train and him and the circus tents and things. So, yeah, lasting, timeless presence in the park.
Yeah, the circus train really is Casey Jr.
Soap
and Splash. Yeah, or Splash and Soap. So. I agree. Yep, that's a great area, by the way. We've talked about it before, but...
And just as Tinkerbell flies during Wishes, at one of the fireworks shows at Disneyland, Dumbo flies.
I think you're right. I think it's the magical show that airs in the summer, maybe?
Or yeah, something summer. Like that. And I saw the video, but frightening. I would love to see that in person.
frightening.
Giant elephant flying towards me.
Yeah, baby mine... continues, and I can't really say where I've heard it recently, but I heard it somewhere on TV, like a commercial or something. And I thought, hey, this is from Dumbo. Like, people don't know that, but that Baby Mine song has lasted and lasted and lasted.
I have a special connection to Dumbo. When I was a child, I'm going to go back here and tell a story. When I was a child...
It's just like every child's story, but go ahead.
There was a video rental store right across the street from my grandmother's house where I would be each day while my parents were at work. And I vividly remember being 3 and 4 years old. And my dad would stop in and pick me up, and then we'd go over to this video called D Video. And we would go in there, and children's videos were free. And so he would always let me get a movie. And not every time, but 95% of the time, I got Dumbo, and I watched Dumbo over and over and over again. And my favorite animal to this day is the elephant, and I think it has a lot to do with Dumbo. And I cannot hear the song Baby Mine without needing to call my mother and tell her I love her.
Oh.
My 3-year-old nephew experienced Dumbo for the first time just a month or two ago. He was sitting behind me in the van, and he was watching it for the first time on our portable DVD player, just giggling away. And my sister said he still really enjoys it. So, timeless.
Yeah. Oh, Pink Elephants on Parade, Fantasmic Disneyland.
Yes. A very long scene.
Which is very bizarre.
It is very bizarre, yeah. Da-da! Yeah, it's very neon.
Yeah, psychedelic even.
Finishing my story, talking about timeless.
Oh, it's still going.
Dumbo is timeless, but D-Video was not. Because I vividly remember one day we stopped going there. And I asked my dad, why can't we go to the video place? And they turned it into an adult video store. So,
there you go. Kind of baby mine.
Ever since I've joined Twitter and been following Twitter Disney people, I feel like at least once every few months, someone's like, why don't we have a Dumbo meet and greet? Like, I guess he has shown up every once in a while for like press things. And they're like, well, I just want to take a picture with Dumbo. So maybe
when
one day.
When New Fantasyland opened and they did the big thing on the stage, he was there.
See, there you go.
And yeah, it's very awkward looking, but I think it would be so much fun to have a Dumbo meet and greet.
Yeah, absolutely.
And especially there in Storybook Circus, it totally makes sense. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, now we get to the first movie on our list that maybe doesn't have quite the presence in the parks, and that is Bambi from 1942. Speaking of childhood stories, the first movie I saw in the theater was Bambi. Obviously, it was a re-release.
I was going to say, how old are you?
Yeah. Well, see, back before VHS, they had to re-release films. Otherwise, you didn't really have a way of ever seeing it again.
We got Benjamin Button with us here.
I don't know of any presence it has in the parks other than, like, it's in one of those bubbles in Fantasmic.
Yeah, very short little April showers bit.
You will find...
Oh, I saw freaking Thumper at Animal Kingdom a few weeks ago. That was the craziest thing I've ever seen.
No, like a meet and greet? Or did you see a real rabbit?
It turned into a meet and greet, but it was just a real rabbit. No, it was weird because it was this weird dance block party thing near Chester Nestor's Dino-Rama out on the street. And it was like Brer Bear, Brer Fox, Mushu, and Thumper. And so after it was all over, they were taking pictures and stuff. But they were out there doing like the electric slide. I was like, it's Thumper. And Jessica was like, why is that such a big deal? It's Thumper. Bambi.
And yeah, he came out a couple years ago with Mrs. Bunny as well around Easter and did a meet and greet at Animal Kingdom. But you also can find some Bambi topiaries during the flower and garden. So...
You know who won't be doing a meet and greet is Bambi's mother.
Why?
Unless,
what
of
happened?
Of course, you're at the Artist Point restaurant.
In which you can meet her when she comes on your plate. Yes. You know, it is kind of interesting because Bambi, again, an underrepresented film in the parks. And again, I don't know how to do it to make it well done or whatever. But still an iconic film. I mean, you ask people about Bambi, they know Bambi.
Sure, or at least they really know.
The trauma that Bambi brought, anyways.
A spring does not go by, or any time you see animals getting frisky outside, that you don't hear someone use the word Twitterpated.
Yes, that's true.
Also, fun fact: Bambi is a boy. However, most strippers have chosen the name Bambi and have made it feminine. So,
Disney World strippers? What?
Yeah, you know, over at the D-Video or whatever.
I feel like in the Land Pavilion, PETA could sponsor some film about hunting and then show Bambi's.
One of those stories, though, the story about Bambi and how Walt chose to have that story told about his mother being shot and killed by a hunter is one of those good stories about Walt as the storyteller, that he completely changed the way they were planning on telling the story visually. It was actually Walt's idea just to not go back, not to see anything, just to have the dad come and take Bambi away immediately.
The animators originally talked about, we got to have a bloody mess here, you know, that he stumbles upon, and it was just very subtle. Ugh. And that was effective. And they did a big AFI 100 Greatest Villains of All Time, you know, a couple years back. And Man came in like the top 10.
That's
which
crazy.
Is the from Bambi,
yeah.
The man that shot Bambi's mother.
Wow.
So he's one of the top villains of all time.
On the, he's unseen. He should be like a shadow in the villains' merchandise and stuff. Just in the back.
No, he should be
with
in
a gun.
He should be in the villains' mix and mingle at Halloween, and you get in line to meet Man. It's just like a cardboard cutout of like a silhouette.
Yeah.
No, it's just like
Bambi's dad saying, "Go away."
Or it's just like I'm thinking it's just like Buford from, you know, down the road in Avon Park with his
camouflage. Arguably, the man's really not a villain.
That's true. Yeah.
He's just hunting.
I mean, if you've ever eaten deer in your life, then you can't really say.
But that's that's the same people that argue that Maleficent's not a villain. She's just misunderstood.
No.
Oh, no, it's not. In the great circle of life, the man is just hunting.
That's right. That's right. Okay, well, let's speed things along because the last six films were all part of these package films that Disney released. Many of them, the first four, maybe all of them, were all of them just short films? It was almost like a popular music version of Fantasia. Not so much Saludos Amigos and the Three Caballeros.
Yeah, Saludos Amigos and Three Caballeros came about. Well, you have to understand, in the grand scope of history, World War II had broken out, and
preclude your excitement about this. These are like your favorite films, right?
Me?
Yes, aren't these like your thing?
I mean, I love Saludos Amigos and Three Caballeros. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say they're my favorite, but yeah, I really enjoy them.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
A little bit of history. World War II has broken out. A lot of the animators have gone off to fight overseas. He has a very minimal staff. They're not able to distribute films overseas to get the cash flow going that they need to continue to make films like Pinocchio. And so they really are just struggling to survive during this time. And actually, the Saludos Amigos and Three Caballeros came about because Walt was offered by the U.S. government to travel to South America on a goodwill tour. And it was originally just going to be a handshaking tour because at that time they were worried about these countries in Central and South America aligning themselves with the evils of Europe, you know, and they wanted to make sure they remained allies. But Walt said, can I take animators with me? And I'd love to turn these into films, which is what you have. So they're like patchwork films in that they're three or four little shorts, but they're all kind of pieced together. And you actually get some really cool footage of actual Disney animators traveling and experiencing the cultures in South America.
Hmm.
And with unusually high park time, you know, if you consider the Grand Fiesta Tour.
Yes.
With the Three Caballeros. And then the topiary I mentioned from Coronado Springs, which also I think the little sundry store, the little general store at Coronado Springs is called Panchito's Sundries or something like that.
Okay.
And I know that they are the centerpiece of the main pool at All-Star Music, the Three Caballeros are.
Yeah, yes. and I read at one time, of course, we live in a more global society now, but at one time, Jose Carioca, I can't ever say his last name.
Yeah.
He was bigger in Brazil than even Mickey Mouse was. He was more popular there. Oh. So I think that has some lasting impact as well, his popularity. Panchito is only in Three Caballeros. He's not in Saludos Amigos. And he's from Mexico. He's my favorite of the trio because he's kind of crazy.
He's the
and
rooster,
fun.
Right?
The rooster, yeah. And he just kind of shoots at things.
Because it was Goofy in Saludos Amigos, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
I really enjoy, the more I ride it, I really do enjoy Grand Fiesta Tour. They really add a lot of personality to that ride, I think. One of maybe my favorite parade, period. The more I listen to the soundtrack of Soundsational, which is over in Disneyland, I love it because it is definitely the fastest parade tempo there is and just keeps that upbeat tempo the entire time. And one of the segments is the Three Caballeros, and they sing the song, "We Three Caballeros." It's a lot of fun. It's very bright and colorful. And the fact that they get a whole... I don't know. I've never even seen this movie, full disclosure. And the fact that they're so present in the parks, like you say, Matt, it's almost surprising how much you see of them. But.
Well, and it has Donald Duck in it as well, which, you know, Donald is Fab Five, so there's some lasting power there. I think if you take away Donald and you insert another not-so-well-known... bird character, you're probably not going to have it as popular as what it
That's
has
good point.
Become.
Yeah. Well, after that came another one of the package films, and this was Make My Music. And I think this is what I was talking about, where it was kind of like Fantasia, but set to popular music at the time.
Yes, yes.
So like shorts. And the only one I know of is Casey at the Bat, which does have some representation because you've got Casey's Corner there at the end of Main Street, yes, where they sell like hot dogs and corn dog links and stuff.
One
like
of my favorite shorts. Now, what's funny about these, all these that we're going to mention right now, is that when I was little, and you'd go to the video store, or go to the grocery store or whatever, Walmart, and you were to buy Disney videos, they packaged all of these little 25 minute shorts from all of these six movies we're going to talk about as like their own little VHS tape. Mm. And so one of my favorites, I don't even remember the name of it, was the saxophone, it was the two different islands. One was the jazz island and one was the classical island, and the little jazz saxophone guy fell in love with the little classical cello girl, and they were warring and shooting music, and the whole thing, they don't talk, they only use the instruments as their voices. And I think there's a video, not a video, I think there's a poster of one of these in Mickey's PhilharMagic Queue, isn't there?
There is. Now, the three segments that I'm most familiar with, or at least stick out in my mind, Casey at the Bat, definitely that one based on the very popular poem. Then Peter and the poem. Wolf, isn't it?
Peter and the Wolf, yes.
And then the other one that's featured in the queue for PhilharMagic is Willie the whale from The Whale, yeah, Who Wanted to Sing at the Met.
Okay.
And these are films, again, I didn't realize I'd seen these shorts. There's 10 total in this whole Make Mine Music. But I remember watching them as a kid, as, like Matt said, the short was cut from the film as a whole. So, you know, I don't remember ever sitting down and watching Make Mine Music knowing that that was what it was, but I remember seeing Peter and the Wolf and seeing these kind of things.
Yeah, so. I think most people would agree. I think most people, when they go to the park and they see, like, even Casey at the Bat, Casey's Corner, it took me a few trips before I made the connection to Make Mine Music, because again, this is one I haven't seen. And I think people would be surprised the representation these have in the parks.
Here's something very interesting about this, and I'm just reading this now, I apologize. One of the segments for this was called Blue Bayou, and it was originally actually intended for Fantasia with the song Clair de Lune by Claude Debussy, but was replaced by a song called Blue Bayou and the Ken Darby Singers. So that, or by the Ken Darby Singers. So that is one of those instances where it was literally overdone with, instead of the classical Fantasia feel, with pop music.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that had any, I mean, obviously he was thinking these things all together, but any of that inspired the New Orleans Square and the Blue Bayou restaurant and things over there at Disneyland. Just a thought.
Seems like it would, yeah. Well, after Make Mine Music was 1947's Fun and Fancy Free, which was kind of along the same vein as Make
Except
Mine Music.
Make Mine Music had 10 segments. This one only has two main segments.
Oh, funny.
Hosted by Jiminy Cricket, but the first segment was Bongo the Bear, which you may have seen, about a circus bear named Bongo.
I loved Bongo when I was little. This was one of those that I bought in its own little VHS tape.
Yeah. And then the other half of that is Mickey and the Beanstalk. So a classic retelling of Jack and the Beanstalk, which has a presence in the park there in one of the shops in Fantasyland. You have
Sir Mickey's.
Sir Mickey's, yeah, with Willie the Giant lifting
who randomly
up the
shows up at things.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Mickey's Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
It's like when they needed a big dumb oaf of a character. Yeah, it's like, we got Willie on. Yeah, there we go.
I remember this one on Ice. They had, I don't know what, it was just one of those random, you know, different shows on Ice, and part of it was Mickey and the Beanstalk. They didn't have the whole Willie character. They just had this big inflatable arm that came out of the curtain and was like swapping at the characters. It's kind of funny to think about now.
Like the giant bird in Finding Nemo the Musical.
Yeah, it was just a big hand that didn't have any articulation whatsoever. I always loved Mickey and the Beanstalk, and I just watched it this morning before we headed out with my daughter. We watched it together. Aww. Well, she watched part of it. She's
yeah,
not interested, obviously, I'm being sure 4 months absorbed. Old.
Yeah.
Gotta teach that child.
I will say, even though I was a little irritated that Jeremy dragged me all the way over there to show me how cool it was, it is pretty cool, that Sir Mickey store, where it looks like the giant is leaning over, holding up the rooftop for you, and you see the beanstalk all around the edges, yep. And it is pretty cool, I will say that.
When did I do that?
Several years ago. I think I was with our family.
Oh, okay.
And you said, just come, and I was like, seriously?
Now you know. Now you know he was irritated.
Well, I know I irritate him often, but
I don't hide it very well when I'm around Jeremy.
Bongo was great. Now, the odd part about this film and its complete fashion, not the shorts, but the complete film, is not only that it's those two shorts, but there's odd live-action parts with, and for the life of me, I was trying to remember the name of the guy. It goes back and forth from these animated shorts to this kind of live-action living room with this guy who was a very popular ventriloquist
Paul
at the time.
Winchell?
Yeah, who later did the voice of Tigger.
No. I'm sorry. It's Edgar Bergen.
Oh, there you go. Maybe.
Yeah.
And he had all his little dummies there, and it's just really
yes. I forgot about that. Yeah.
He's having like a little house party with them, and they're all ventriloquist dummies, and he's talking to them and stuff, and I'm sure it was nice and kitschy at the time. Now it's disturbing.
It is kind of creepy. Yeah, I don't need any live action in this.
Mortimer. That's the name of that one dummy. He's kind of the dumb one with the hat, Mortimer.
Yeah. Very 1940s.
Yeah.
Well, after that was the fifth of the six films, and that was Melody Time, which I know had Pecos Bill, right?
Pecos Bill, yep. And The Legend of Johnny Appleseed. Probably the two biggest shorts in that film. Then you also had Blame It on the Samba, Trees, Little Toot. You know, just again, little tiny, I think there was eight or seven of them in this film.
I will say the Pecos Bill Cafe in Frontierland, I had never even thought twice about why it should be there, because Frontierland, it makes sense, but I didn't realize until years later that it really does have a Disney tie-in. I thought,
yeah, in fact, his face, the cartoon face, I think is on the logo.
It is. But I just thought it was, you know, I mean,
yeah, just
it's
a
Disney
generic
World, they hire animators, you know, who can draw faces, so I just assumed
definitely
it was a generic face, but
so.
This one also features Donald Duck and Jose Carioca.
Does it?
Yeah, I think
not Panchito.
I think they just make a little appearance in one of the shorts.
It says they meet some bird. I don't remember that part. I do remember Pecos Bill as its own little segment. I remember liking that one a lot.
Yeah. Again, this 1940s, you have the war going on. It was a tough time for Walt. He actually experienced a nervous breakdown during this time of, you know, in his life. The union strikes were going on during this time as well.
Turning Walt Republican for the rest of his life.
And so you have a difficult time. And despite those difficulties, you do get some nice, good treasures there that have lasted, and their legacy continues in the park as well. And then we turn the page for another podcast, 1950 Cinderella.
You're forgetting.
Yeah. Which brings us to the end of the six package films and the end of the 1940s, which was The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad.
I never forget about that movie. That's one of my favorites.
You did really enjoy the ride in Disneyland.
Yes, the ride had a presence here in Florida, closed, and now Winnie the Pooh is in his place. But he still exists live and well in Disneyland, and I loved it. And the film really is great. The Ichabod one is not one of my favorites.
Oh, I love that one. Bing Crosby, for crying out loud. There's your pop reference for the decade, like three decades.
It gave us the waffle sandwiches over at Sleepy Hollow.
That is true as well.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, okay, all right, fine. But if I had to pick, I'd pick Toad over Ichabod.
The Headless Horseman is a missed opportunity for Disney on many things. Now, I know they utilized him for the Mickey's Not So Scary Boo to You Halloween Parade off and on, and now he just kind of trots through there, and that's fine, too. At the campground, they used to have some sort of carriage ride around Halloween time in which, I don't know if you actually saw the Headless Horseman or it was just the legend that they told you while you were on this carriage ride at the campground. But, I mean, of all the villains, he's a really kind of dark, sinister, and really more than any of the other villains, he just lacks a personality. Because he's got no head. there's a coldness about him that the villains, you know, as cold as they are, they're still relatable as people. He is just, you know, he's just a monster. So yeah. I don't know why they don't use him more for some of the darker things.
It's interesting to me that because of the parade and because of Sleepy Hollow, the restaurant, that the Ichabod half of that has more references in Disney World than Mr. Toad does now that the ride is gone. Because Mr. Toad, to me, screams everything Disney is all about. The Wind in the Willow story and all those fun characters. But hey, what do I know?
Hey, Mr. Toad still can be seen in the Pet Cemetery at Haunted Mansion.
Okay, that's true. There you go.
And in the owl's thing, the little deal.
That's right,
in the owl's house.
in the Winnie the Pooh ride.
Now, real quick, this isn't one of the feature films, but he did produce 75 silly symphonies from 1929 to 1939. And I was surprised that these have several references, too. Most prominently in Disneyland, they have the Silly Symphony Swings, which is, you know, your off-the-shelf traditional swings ride, but it plays epic music as you swing. And then the Three Little Pigs have been in several things as well. Like, there's the Fiddler... Well, what's it called? Cafe in Disneyland. Fiddler, Pfeiffer, Practical?
The Fiddler, Fife, and Practical.
There you go. Yeah. And they were in Spectro Magic, I remember, because I always thought that was strange.
Big Bad Wolf, isn't he in the little villain show at the
He makes
Halloween
it
deal?
Yeah. Or at least in the parade. Yeah, Three Little Pigs, though, that was, I mean, again, you're talking about something very iconic, especially in that day. These little shorts were throwaways. You know, they'd play before a movie for a week or two, but Three Little Pigs lasted months and months and months, and people went just to see the movie or the short before the film even started of the Three Little Pigs. So they definitely have their place in the Disney pantheon, and I like that they're represented in the parks, though.
Yeah, I think it's cool. Yep. Well, there you go. That brings us all the way to 1950, which we will touch on next time we pick up this series. And I think we'll get into more films that will be even more recognizable than some of the ones we talked about today. So we hope you'll come back for that. Thank you so much for listening. I think I'm going to sign us out here and say be sure to follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook and leave us a review on iTunes if you haven't done so already. And if nobody has anything else to say, then adios. We'll see you next time.
Live long and prosper.
Bye now.